south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. I'd like to start today by talking a little bit more about the cost of living down here in Latin America. Now, if you've been listening to me for a while, you'll know that I'll often throw cost of living numbers out, like, for example, when you're living on the gringo tourist trail, like in Panama, Costa Rica, Cancun, Rio, etc., and any place where cruise ships stop, as far as the cost of living for gringos and expats, for most things, except for maybe food, you'll be paying just as much as the average cost of things up in the first world. But what are the average costs for things up in the first world? The thing is, certain costs and expenditures up there are wide-ranging too, right? So it's legitimate to ask, how can a guy like me generalize and say, for example, that the cost of food is a fifth of what it is up in the States? Well, I'll get to some hard facts on that in a second. And the other thing you hear me talk about a lot in regards to the cost of living down here in Latin America is that when you live off the tourist trail like me, almost everything produced locally is amazingly cheap. That's why I keep saying that you could easily live a first world lifestyle down here on a quarter or less of what you're spending right now up in the States. But the question is, just what are you buying on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis? And just how much are you paying for basic living expenses? Well, just hold on a minute. We'll get to that. And also, you've heard me say a lot that if you're a single person living on a Social Security check of about $1,500 a month, which is the average payout. In fact, I think it's a little more than that. Anyway, if you're living solely on a Social Security check, I always say that when you're down here in Latin America off the tourist trail, you can continue to live your completely first world middle class life on that measly government check. In fact, I know a few gringo expats living alone, getting a Social Security check down here, who are living a noticeable notch or two better than first world middle class people who are still in the workforce and on that treadmill up in the States. And first world people always wonder, how can that be? Well, that's because if you're down here alone getting a Social Security check, you've only got one person to support, you. And if you're a couple with two Social Security checks coming in, well, then you've really got it made. Down here, you're surely living much better than you did when you lived up in the first world still working that full-time job. Now, my friends and family up in Chicago have told me, just for a couple, two people, to live a basic middle-class lifestyle, that is, no frills, no going out, no vacations, no partying, drinking, gift-giving, or even splurging on pizzas or Girl Scout cookies, not to mention no routine purchases of expensive gadgets like the latest iPhone, big-screen TVs, and high-speed internet either. Now, even that mundane lifestyle would cost the average couple about $3,000 to $4,000 a month. And that, according to some of the people I've talked to, is the way it is up in Chicago. You get the picture, just kind of surviving and living a pretty bland and mediocre life. And for a guy like me, that's pretty shocking, since I'm really living the good life, and I spend maybe $1,000 to $1,500 a month, though I don't drink or party unless someone else is footing the bill. In fact, I don't have any booze in my house at all. And if you open up my refrigerator, I do have two cans of beer that have been sitting there for over a year. So as you might imagine, I don't have much company. And that's what happens when you travel a lot. So anyway, my friends and family mentioned the numbers $3,000 to $4,000 a month for two people to live an absolutely no-frills middle-class life in Chicago. Oh yeah, and I forgot to tell you that $3,000 or $4,000 a month does not include car payments, credit card payments, or monthly payment plans either. But it does include your house or rent payment and quick pick lotto tickets. Just kidding. About the lotto tickets, that is. Anyway, that $3,000 to $4,000 a month number is just kind of a word-of-mouth poll amongst my friends and family. And when you think about it, it sounds like a real sad and tragic life to look forward to, doesn't it? I mean, none of us wants to live like that, right? So, what's it all mean? It means if you live up in the States, you're going to need a lot more than two Social Security checks to live a nice life as a couple. You're going to need that in some kind of a pension or other income. And it still just might be a pretty sad life to look forward to. Now, if you pay attention to the alternative media, you may have heard analysts say that the average family of four in the U.S. makes about $50,000 a year, which is about $4,200 a month. Oh, and by the way, before I get on with that, let me remind you, if you live down here in Latin America, off the tourist trail like I do, anything that's imported from the first world is going to be more expensive than what you pay for it, since it had to get shipped here from the first world, and then, of course, they've got their taxes and duties added. However, the strange thing is that if you shop at any of the big box stores down here, like Walmart or Costco, or even the big franchise chains like Sears or Office Depot, the prices will be the same as they are in the U.S. and sometimes a little less. Don't ask me how they do that, but it's probably due to two factors: big volume purchases and sweetheart import-export deals that they've made with the government. Because, you know, a company like Walmart throws a hell of a lot of weight around. I mean, after all, it is the largest single employer in all of Latin America. And, you know, it's still hard for people to believe that. It still shocks me when I hear it. Especially since I didn't see a single Walmart in Latin America till about 6 or 7 years ago. So anyway, as a general rule, you're going to pay more than first world prices for first world imports unless you're buying at a big box store. However, if you buy goods down here that are imported from another Latin American country, they're always going to be much cheaper than in the first world, since most Latin countries are now in Mercosur and in other Latin free trade organizations. And sure, it's a form of protectionism, but it generally keeps Latin products cheap and first world products more expensive. And you know, long-term expats really don't care much about that, since eventually we learn to wean ourselves off that expensive first world stuff. Eventually you figure out that there's plenty of locally made alternatives. Now, once you've been down here for quite a while, turns out there are very few first world things you really need to buy. In fact, I remember what it was like 10 years or so ago when there were no first world franchises or box stores, and when you did happen to run into a first world product somewhere, sometimes you'd just snap it up because you figured the next gringo that walked by would. That's why a lot of long-term expats have closets full of dusty first world junk they bought on impulse, just like that. In fact, some years ago, I remember one gringo friend calling me and saying, "Hey Johnny, you like cottage cheese? I mean, a real American cottage cheese." And I said, "Not that much, I'm not really into it, but what's up?" Anyway, he happened to be in a big grocery store chain in Cartagena, Colombia, and he stumbled on a worker stocking the shelves with real American imported cottage cheese. And my friend bought every one of them. There were like 30 or 40 two-pound plastic containers. And get this, this expat guy loved cottage cheese so much that he actually bought an extra small refrigerator because his regular refri, that's what they call them down here, refres, because it takes some effort to say the whole word, refrigeradora. Anyway, his regular refri could only hold 10 of them, so he bought another little one, just for the excess. Now, his Latina wife thought he was a little nuts for going overboard like that, but they're used to expats and gringos pulling oddball stunts like that. Yep, I have to admit, every one of us that comes down here is a bit eccentric in his or her way. Anyway, the next time I visited his house, what do you think he did? He brought out the Borden cottage cheese, you know, with good old Elsie the cow on the label. What else? And after that, practically every time I came over, cottage cheese was well represented on the menu. In fact, too well represented. And one day when I grabbed the plastic carton and started reading the label, I noticed that the product was about 3 or 4 months past its expiration date. Now, I know a lot of you guys up in the first world pay close attention to those expiration dates, but when you're down here, one of the first things you're going to notice is that they often sell things in grocery stores that are well past their date. And you know, when I first got down here, I used to freak out about that. But I'm a lot more realistic now, and you will be too. In fact, it might amuse you to know that putting expiration dates on products in the grocery store is pretty much a recent concept down here in Latin America. Oh yes, pretty much everything now does have an expiration date, but 10 years ago, almost nothing did. So, are you freaking out yet? Well, think about this. When I was a kid back in the 60s and 70s, I think the only thing that did have an expiration date on it was milk. In fact, I don't remember anything else having it till the 70s and 80s. So, guess how many of the hundreds of kids I went to school with back then got sick or died because of that? None. Yet these days, so many people are absolutely petrified when something in their food hamper or refrigerator goes 1 day over the expiration. Come on, are we pampered or what? Now, if you have half a brain, you'll know there's a lot of products that can go a long time past their expiration date and some that can't. Now, to prove a point, and you should know this, under the right conditions, honey virtually never spoils. Neither does coconut oil. However, when you buy that stuff in any store, they're stamped with an expiration date. So what's that all about? I mean, come on, they found perfectly good honey in King Tut's tomb, remember? Anyway, as for the cottage cheese, well, my expat buddy insisted he'd keep eating that cottage cheese, which was his absolute favorite, until either his taste buds or his eyes told him that the stuff had truly gone bad. I mean, like he said, after all, what's cottage cheese anyway but milk that's gone way past its expiration date? And one last thing about expiration dates. Now, you know, if you've been listening to this program for any length of time, all Latin governments and cities do have sanitary food and inspection departments, but they almost never inspect anything unless there's a massive food poisoning episode and people end up in hospital or dead. You know those government types that work in departments like that? They sit on their dead asses like slugs and watch TV or pick lint out of their navels while reading yesterday's newspaper. That's if they can read. The rest, look at the pictures. So anyway, that said, you really have to wonder if those expiration dates that are so prominent on labels these days, even down here, are they really correct? Can you count on what they indicate? Do they mean anything or are they just a show? I mean, if no one cares and no one does the inspections, manufacturers can put anything they want on there, right? Well, not really, because many of these food products are distributed internationally, that is, to other adjacent Latin countries. And in order to get the permission and licensing to sell at other grocery stores in other countries, even other Latin countries with the same loose standards, even down here, products shipped internationally are tested and monitored. Once they get shipped over a border, the standards suddenly become much more strict. It's just like the case of pharmaceuticals and generics. And in that case, I never recommend that you buy a generic drug that's only produced and used within one particular Latin country. Because then, inspections and testing could be pretty shoddy. However, if the product is shipped internationally or even to adjacent Latin countries, then the quality control monitoring becomes very strict. You see what I mean? So does that mean when you're in a grocery store down here, you should just ignore what the expiration date on the label says? Well, my advice is, just use it as a very general guideline. Oh, and one more thing, and I know I'm jumping all over the place on this show, so bear with me. Like that's something new for me, right? Anyway, it does appear that a lot of first world manufacturers are using Latin America as a dumping ground for a lot of their own products that have reached their expiration date or beyond. I mean, really, you gotta wonder, where do cases and pallet loads, truckloads, even train car loads of product go when they're past their date? You don't think that Nestle's or Procter & Gamble or Kellogg's buries or torches that stuff now, do you? Nope, but a lot of that stuff ends up down here. And how do I know that? Well, get this. Every Latin American city has dozens and dozens of little food and product outlets, kind of like a Ben Franklin or Woolworth's variety store we all had back in the States in our town. If you remember, those chains went out of business in the 80s and the 90s. Anyway, down here, every medium and large-sized city has dozens and dozens of little independent variety stores like that, and they'll always have a little section with canned and boxed food items from the first world. Common products you were used to seeing back home, like Planters peanuts, Skippy peanut butter, Oreos, Chips Ahoy, Nestle's Quick, Hershey bars, M&M's, things like that. And when those first world products started showing up some 6 or 7 years ago, I too was suddenly taken in by the sudden availability of all that stuff. And occasionally I'd buy some M&M's or Grape Nuts Flakes, Jiffy peanut butter, or whatever. And although the packaging looked perfectly fine, I began to notice that some of the contents were pretty stale and old, especially the Hershey's Kisses. Sometimes part of the chocolate had dried up and turned into a powder. Somehow they'd gotten desiccated. And I know from chemistry, in nature, that takes a hell of a long time. That was when I started paying a lot more attention to the expiration dates. And guess what? I found out that there were some products that were expired by many months and others didn't even have a date stamped on them at all. And some of them had a convenient little sticker over the top of the place where the expiration date should have been, listing all the ingredients in Spanish. And if you ask me, that's way too convenient. Oh, and by the way, every Latin country does have a law that says any imported first world food product must have an additional label pasted on like that, listing all the ingredients in Spanish. So if you're up in the States thinking of exporting anything to Latin America, keep that in mind. Anyway, like I said before, a few years back, gringos and expats used to really get excited when they saw the sudden appearance of some sorely missed first world food product when it suddenly landed on the shelves of a local Latin supermarket. But those days are long gone. Not only can you get most of that stuff these days at the big box stores, like Walmart and Costco, but better yet, to avoid those despicable places and avoid contributing to Sam Walton's trust fund, you can skip those stores altogether and buy the Latin version of your favorite products. Now, you see, it took some time, but Latins have pretty much their own version of everything first world down here now. Except some of the high-tech smartphones and appliances and such. All that's made in China these days, so down here we get that stuff just as cheap as you get it up in the States. Oh, and by the way, regarding my expat friend and his cottage cheese, well, now you can get actual first world cottage cheese at places like Walmart and Costco any day of the week. And as for my friend, he never wants to see another dab of cottage cheese as long as he lives. And neither does his dog, who, by the way, ended up eating the last four or five containers of the stuff once the fluffy white color started turning a bit green. Yuck. Oh, but there's more. Turns out, last year, right after Christmas, the day before New Year's, I was in a Costco myself looking at that great after Christmas closeout sale they were having on Christmas decorations when I saw six or seven pallets of edible merchandise laid out in the middle of the main aisle, and there was a little sign in Spanish and English on each one that said, "Closeout sale, 50% off." Well, being the kind of guy that's instantly drawn to 50% off sales, I was all over that stuff in like 7 seconds. Turns out, I bought about 10 little six-packs of those single-serving Dannon natural yogurts. And of course, I looked at the expiration date, and guess what? Everything on those pellets had just expired in only the last couple of weeks. So I guess that's what you can do if you run a big box store like that in a third world country, and you've got some product that just slipped past its expiration date, you could stick it out in the main aisle and have a 50% sale. Nothing wrong with that, right? Not to mention again, it was yogurt, which, like cottage cheese, is just milk that's way past its expiration date, right? Anyway, I know in the first world, you could never sell anything past its expiration date. Why? Because if someone bought it and got sick, you could sue the pants off the owners of the store. While down here, of course, people just don't sue for things like that. In fact, almost no one ever gets sued. So, what's it all about, Alfie? Well, it's all about buyer beware. When you come down here, you've got little or no big brother and no nanny state here, there, and everywhere protecting you from every little thing. It's buyer beware, and guess what? Us expats, we happen to like it like that. So bottom line, you could stay up in Cleveland with the Surgeon General, Hillary, John McCain, and Obama looking after you. Or you can come on down to Latin America and look after yourself. Scary, huh? So anyway, let's get back to my cost of living rant. If you remember, and that was a long time ago, I mentioned there are two things that are always first world expensive down here, and sometimes even more expensive. One of them being imported first world products. And the second thing is the unbelievably high cost of electricity. In fact, the price of electricity down here in some places could be up to 4 times as much as you're spending per kilowatt hour up in the States. So go ahead, check your electric bill right now, and multiply it by about 3 or 4, and you'll see what you'd pay if you came down here with all your electrical toys and appliances and didn't change your habits a bit. And that's why so many of us smart expats live in the Altiplano region. That way, we have no heating or air conditioning bills at all. And for example, if you live in the Midwestern United States, you'll see that your heating and air conditioning bill accounts for well over half of your kilowatt usage. So, if you can eliminate that by, for example, living in the Altiplano region or living in a beach house with no AC at all, your monthly electric bill, even with a family of four, probably will never go over $50 or $60. In fact, my electric bill at my main residence, a 3,500 square foot house, runs me about $40 to $50 a month when I'm actually living there. And the only reason why it's that expensive, since I'm really not there that much, it's because when I'm not home, I always leave a couple outside lights on and inside lamps on timers to make it look like I'm at home. Now, in the last full month that I stayed there, I used about 250 kilowatt hours, and the bill was about $50. But I know up in Chicago, it would be half of that, even less, maybe $20 to $23. Now, if you look at your electric bill, I'm sure you're using over 500 kilowatt hours a month. And I bet most of you are pushing 1,000 kilowatt hours a month. In other words, you got about a $100 a month electric bill. which would be $200 or $300 a month down here. That is if you were living on the coast or on a beach or in the lowlands, because your air conditioning would be running all the time. And if you lived in Argentina or Chile or Uruguay or in southern Brazil, it'd be like living up north. You'd be using air conditioning and heating because you got the four seasons. Then on average for your electric bill, you'd be paying $200 or $300 a month too. Anyway, don't think this is a plug for the Altiplano region, because I don't really want to be responsible for a stampede of gringos coming down here and ruining it for me. But you know, there's only about 50 really choice Altiplano small towns and cities to choose from. Sure, you could live on the side of a mountain at the perfect elevation practically anywhere in Latin America and get the perfect Altiplano climate effect. But you're going to be far, far away from a town of 5,000 or more with all the necessary shopping and professional services and things you might need to live a nice first world lifestyle. Anyway, it's not so smart to live all isolated and alone anywhere in the world. And speaking of the Altiplano region, which people ask me about all the time, in fact, I'd say the Altiplano region only makes up about 5% or less of all residential areas in Latin America. And I'm not saying you don't have a hell of a lot of room in the Altiplano. You do. There's wide open spaces, that's for sure. But hell, it took me 5 or 6 years to even find the place. In fact, I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know what the word Altiplano meant until on one little journey I finally landed in a place that never seemed to get miserably hot. In fact, at night, many times I found I needed a sweater or a jacket. Now, 95% of all people who go on vacation to a tropical climate would never think of bringing that stuff now, would they? Why pack your bag with something you'll never use? Right? Wrong. And though in the day it's almost always in the upper or mid-70s, well, at night, it does occasionally drop into the 50s. Anyway, I didn't know what the Altiplano was till I was down here a few years at the beach resorts and at sea level. And you know, that's the case with so many gringos. And usually, their first taste of an Altiplano region is San Jose, Costa Rica, because technically, that is Altiplano, since it and the surrounding area is about 4,000 feet above sea level. And that's about the lower limit where the Altiplano effect on climate first kicks in. But you see, most gringos who end up landing in San Jose, Costa Rica, by hook or by crook, are generally tourists who only end up there for a couple of days at most, and don't even realize what kind of beautiful climate they've landed in, because San Jose is generally just a quick stopover when you make a trip to Costa Rica. It's a transit zone for everyone heading to the beach. That is, except for casino-bound tourists, or for lovelorn gringos, who are coming into San Jose for the sex tourism bit, or for dating and mating hookup services that arrange dates and meetings and marriages for clueless, naive, stateside lovelorn gringos. And by the way, for any of lovelorn gringos up there, don't send me any emails asking me about that stuff, because I don't recommend it. And if you want the full scoop of why not, you'll have to go back to a previous show a year or two ago where I give you the full rundown. Anyway, on this show, I always talk about the cost of living down here and how it compares to the cost of living up in the States. But really, it depends where you live in the States, right? I mean, if you live in Boise, Idaho, and you make $50,000 a year for a family of four, you might be doing all right. But try that in New York City, and you'll be lucky to afford anything in the deepest, darkest part of the ghetto. Anyway, just to put all this in perspective, listen to this. According to figures just published by the United States Economic Policy Institute, it costs exactly twice as much to live in New York City for a family of four as it does in Marshall County, Mississippi. And the report goes on to say, the average cost for a modest living family of four in the United States is $63,000 a year. And one of the places that can be found is Newaygo County, Michigan. Now, that's an average over the entire United States. And there in Newaygo County, Michigan, for $63,000, that covers food, transportation, housing, childcare, health care, and taxes. But get this, for that $63,000, even there, it won't cover any extras, including eating out, credit card bills or loans, vacations, or putting one extra cent aside for savings. Now, in New York, that very same lifestyle costs $93,500 for a family of four. And if you live in Mississippi, that lifestyle for four costs $48,000 a year. Now, the article also mentions how well-off Americans really are. And they mention that 2% of Americans are so well off they never have to worry about money. These are people that go to sleep at night and never even think about it. Wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. I bet they're thinking about it. In fact, I bet they're thinking about making more of it. Anyway, it goes on to say here, about 10% of Americans are well off enough that they can continue their present upper middle class style of living on through retirement. In other words, 10% of Americans don't have any retirement worries at all. Then the report goes on to say, another 10% of Americans are living quite well now, but believe they'll be taking a big hit in their style of living once they retire. In other words, the people in this group believe if they continue living like they are now, they'll run out of money during their retirement years. And then the report concludes by saying, the other 60% of Americans are living from paycheck to paycheck or government handout to government handout. And it's that 60% that have zero savings. So how might that compare to living in Latin America? Well, look at it this way. Your average Social Security check, which is about $1,500 a month or about $18,000 a year. Well, I happen to know quite a few expat seniors living down here who get their check direct deposited down here in the Altiplano, and they live a nice, comfortable, first-world, middle-class style life. In fact, one of these guys from New York, who's in his 70s, is married to a young Latina, and he has a 6-year-old daughter with her, and then there's 2 kids from her first marriage living in the household, too. Well, he supports that family of 4, actually 5, including him. And when you walk in his house and look around, it would appear to anyone in the first world that he lives the life of a guy that's making maybe $60,000 a year up in the States. And probably, according to that report I just mentioned, it would be like he and his family are living on $90,000 in New York. And, as a matter of fact, he owns a little beach house too. How's that for a 70-ish guy supporting a family of 5 on only a Social Security check? Now, when I ask him how he compares his lifestyle to his brother and his sister who still live up in New York, he tells me, Johnny, you know what? I'm the luckiest guy in the world. He said, I just can't compare my lifestyle on my Social Security check with my sister and brother up north who barely live a first world life on a private pension and a Social Security check. And just one more little story concerning that you're really going to like. Oops, I'm up against the clock and I have to quit in a few seconds. I promise I'll start with the story next time. Do tune in, you won't regret it.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.